David McCullough is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show, and Bill Russell was just talking about how personal this all is. As you wrote about John Adams, I know you wanted me to know about John Adams, and I want you to tell me why you wanted me to know that. But you also, I think, wanted me to know about a lot of other things happening, that this was a whole lot of pieces, and we've both forgotten the pieces and sort of warped the whole picture, haven't we?
Well, I think there's several things that I hope to achieve. One is to give a sense of the scale of the setting, that we're a cluster of very different colonies with a total population of only 2,500,000 people. We have 260 million people today. We reach from one end of the continent to the other and beyond to Hawaii and Alaska. At that time, virtually all the population was along the eastern shore to a depth of only about 50 miles. Pennsylvania, which was as settled and as cosmopolitan as any place in all of the colonies, was still two-thirds forest. Massachusetts was still two-thirds forest.
You're not talking
forest.
Woods, you're talking forest.
Absolutely, virgin forest. And New York had maybe 18,000 people, Boston about 15,000 people. There wasn't a bank in the whole country. There wasn't a cathedral in the whole country. There was no professional army. There was very little choice for people of talent as to what to do with their lives, by our terms, again, by our terms, which is one of the reasons why so many people of ability took up what we call politics. It was an avenue of expression, an avenue for ambitious people to show their stuff, show what they could do.
What else could they do?
Well, that's what they could go into the ministry.
Yeah,
they could become lawyers, and lawyers were not held in high esteem at all.
Some things don't change.
Some things are very similar. There was no advertising, no media, no insurance empire.
You're both reflecting a different time and being in a colonial condition much an extension of another place.
And you're English subjects, and the real decisions that affect your lives are being made not only across the North Atlantic, an almost unimaginably difficult place to reach, but in effect a different world from what you know. And you know that they don't know how tough you have it here. You know that they don't know what everyday life in America is really about.
And it is so different from the
European
and English
experience.
And
what we don't know today is how hard it was just to get through a day. The inconveniences, the difficulties, the chores, apprehensions, fears that everybody had to cope with. We have no sense, for example, of what it would be like to have an epidemic disease sweep through a town and kill everybody all around us, your own children dying in front of you. We don't know what it would be like to set off for Philadelphia, as John Adams did in the dead of winter, to ride by horseback nearly 400 miles to get to Congress. I was in Washington last night, and there were a number of members of Congress attending a talk I gave, and I said, How many in Congress would get on horseback to ride 40 miles to get to Congress, even in the springtime?
Yeah.
And here's a man in the dead of winter setting off. And you can imagine the kinds of inns and taverns he had to sleep in. And you can't imagine what it would be like to go to a dentist then. Or what it would be like to sit down at night having made the clothes for the family, cooked the meals for the family, been up since 5 o'clock in the morning to feed the stock, maybe to wake up the hired girl, and keeping the fire going. It's 20 degrees outside. The place is drafty. The place is people coming and going, soldiers sleeping on the kitchen floor. You're melting spoons down to make musket balls. And
you're not making this up.
And I'm not making this. Is all literally Abigail Adams' life. And then maybe 10 o'clock, when the house is settled down, the children presumably asleep, you sit down at a table with a quill pen and a candle, and you write one of the many amazing letters that you're going to write year after year, while your husband, your adored husband, is off who knows where serving the country.
And he may or may not get the letter 4 or 6 months later.
That's right. If he's abroad, if he's in Philadelphia, it all depends on who's carrying the letter. If Paul Revere carries the letter, as he did, it'll get there pretty fast, maybe 7 days. You never know whether any message you send is going, how long it's going to take to get there, or if it will get there. You never know when anybody is going to arrive anywhere. Now, we say, I'm leaving on Wednesday. I'm on this 12:15 plane. I'll be arriving at 4:45. That would be inconceivable to anybody in the 18th century. We think of transportation and communication as two different things. At that time, it was the same. And you have to put your head into that vision of reality. No communication can be move faster than somebody on a horse or in a sailing ship, which means slow.
Very
slow.
As you describe that, it makes even more wondrous in some ways the willingness of these people to separate themselves from England. All the things that we don't have that we think we want are represented in England, and we're going to a great deal of trouble, at least one third of the population, to sever all connections with that and turn our faces ultimately the opposite direction.
And to do something nobody's ever done before.
Exactly. You're going to make a nation. You imagine you're going to make a country, a new country. You're going to break away from an imperial power, something that's never been achieved before. And you're going to make a new country. You're not going to make a new Broadway show or a .com or something. You're going to make a new country.
And you don't know how to do it because it's not been done.
And you're kind
of... The IPO's a real stretch.
And I can't overemphasize this. You're not gods. You're not superhumans. You're men and women, and you have faults and failings, and you're vulnerable. And you... And you get down, and you get discouraged, and you maybe think it's not worth it. All of that. And you're troubled by your own jealousy or your own feeling that nobody recognizes all you're doing as they should. All the things that everybody feels.
Pretty human.
If they were gods, if they had been gods, then they deserve no credit because gods can do anything. And it's the fact that they did what they did and were human beings that is the essence of the miracle.
You quote John Adams as saying, we don't have men, people, who are up to these times. They're not there. We are bereft. We don't have people who have the intelligence or the courage or the will or the experience. This is John Adams.
Right. And I think I'm glad you mentioned that because I think it's a very key moment, a very key and revealing expression of anxiety, because again, it's the way we are today. You know, we're not good enough to do this. We don't have men of genius that we need, and they're saying that. Of course, in retrospect, they all seem as if they were men of genius, and many of them were. And John Adams certainly was one. He was a brilliant man. He said, "The times have made me. I'm but an ordinary man. I've been swept up by the wave of history." But he was by no means an ordinary man.
What is striking is, he'd said all of those things, but not too long before he had said precisely the opposite.
Yes.
And it's an indication, I think, of what you're talking about, of just the humanity, the day in, day out, common people in some ways.
When he first gets there, he said,
this is great.
This is the greatest assembly of genius that's ever been. You know, it's like one of the great gatherings of the great minds of the world. And about a week later, he's saying the problem is every man thinks he's a genius and therefore must talk at great length on every subject.
But he was also speaking to the spirit of Voltaire being there, the spirit of John Locke being there. He wasn't just seeing a bunch of guys getting together. Wasn't he also giving a sense of just of 2,000 years in some funny kinds of ways of humans trying to be more than they had ever been before?
Absolutely. He says we're in the greatest revolution in history, and he knows that. Probably what he said in his speech, he gave the greatest speech of his life and one of the greatest speeches and most important speeches in American history on July 1st. If Jefferson was the pen of independence, Adams was the voice. And the great shame is that we don't know exactly what he said. But we do know he spoke for 2 hours because the New Jersey delegation turned up an hour late and asked him to repeat himself.
Can we have him repeat himself when we come back in just a moment?
Which he gladly did.
You find that place. We'll be back in a moment and we'll have him repeat himself, that being John Adams by way of David McCullough. Be with us when we return.